This is the Thrive Content Clubcast.
Hi, and welcome to Content Clubcast. I'm Laura, I'm a learning designer at Thrive, and today I've got Ollie Krohn with me, who's the head of sustainability at DPD, and we're going to be talking about how businesses can be more sustainable. Thanks for inviting us here to the DPD Hub at Oldbury today.
Hi, Laura.
So I'm just going to start with talking a bit about what you think makes a business truly sustainable. So obviously a lot of companies nowadays know that they need to try and be more green with the current climate. But what do you think makes a business truly sustainable rather than just kind of making a few kind of cursory gestures or superficial sort of steps?
I think, Laura, it's a great point. There's a lot of superficial and there's a lot of talk. DPD UK, as part of Geo Post Group, have a science-based target initiative, net zero target, which is fully validated. We're the only global parcel delivery business to do so. And if people don't know what SBTI is, it's like the Michelin star of net zero accreditations or validations. And by having that, that means that you're publicly stating what you're going to do and your intent. You have to measure your emissions and you need to prove that you're year on year to that target, you're actually reducing your overall emissions. So that's not just talking, that's doing, it's being public and making sure you've got a target there, and then you're publicizing what you're doing to achieve that target. So for me, that's the real important thing, because there's a lot of people that state a date for net zero or talk about what they're doing, but there isn't any real content to that, or they haven't signed up to something like the SBTI to prove that that journey is, they're on that journey, in fact.
What would you say about a business starting from scratch then? Say if it's a small business, they haven't had a chance to take those steps towards sustainability yet. What are those kind of first key steps that they would need to take?
First thing would be to measure your emissions so you understand where you are right now. It needs to be a core part of the strategy. So back in 2020 in DPD, we used to have a 1-2-3 box strategy, which was core to everything in the business. January 2020 at our conference that year, we launched a fourth box. They're all different colors. And this fourth box was green, and it was to be the leaders in sustainable delivery. So by doing that, it's core to the business mission as well. So really businesses, when they start on this journey, as well as measuring where they are, they need to make sure it's core to the business, because one or two people aren't going to make the business sustainable. You need all stakeholders involved. So it's really important to do that, measure it, get someone to certify it as well. We use a business to audit our emissions and our readings to make sure that we're on the right path. So they need to do that and then build a roadmap and look at the low hanging fruit. What can they do first to lower their emissions? Because if you look at the stuff that's not, if we looked at the 250 mile van route and said, right, we need to decarbonize that, the vans aren't there yet, but we've got 80% of our routes that do 80 miles. So we can do a huge chunk of our routes and decarbonize. If you look at the hardest thing, you're never gonna start. So you look at the easy things and move forward, build a roadmap.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of looking at it, actually. So can you touch on a few examples of what DPD are doing? Can you talk a little bit more about, as a business, what you're doing to be more sustainable?
Yeah, sure. So we, as GeoPost, as part of that group, we have the SBTI. So from this year, actually going back to the SBTI, so we're net zero by 2040, and we have a near-term target of 2030, which means on a baseline emissions of 2020, by 2030, we need to reduce 43%. So in 6.5 years, we need to reduce our emissions by 43%. That's huge. So as part of that, we now have a carbon budget year on year, like a financial budget. So we've calculated what we can do year on year, what we can reduce. And that is monitored on a monthly basis. It's reported to our senior leadership team and the ops board. So it is like a financial budget, and it's really having it on that sort of level that it is that important. If you had a financial budget and you're overspending by loads, you'd have to do something in the business strategically to make sure you reel that back in. It's the same with carbon. So we're aligning sort of the financial and carbon reporting sort of structures to make sure it is top priority. So that's really helped. So this year we will have reduced our emissions, and we're ahead of plan at the moment, by 78,000 tons year on year, which is huge. You know, it's massive. So that also then falls into the SBTI net zero path journey, because obviously if we don't understand what we're going to reduce year on year, we're not going to reach the 43% reduction, for example. You know, so it's really important that we have that. I would say that is the most important process in that strategy. But in that, there's sub-strategies, so decarbonisation of our C and D fleet, so our collection delivery fleet. That's why we're electrifying those vehicles. It's huge. You know, we have over 11,000 vans on the road in DPD UK, and 30% of those are electric already now, so about 3,200. By 2030, for the net zero near-term target, that needs to be 100% electric. So by then, we're talking like 15,000 vehicles that need to be electric just in the final mile. And then there's our bigger trucks. We've moved to a fuel called HVO, hydrogenated vegetable oil. So that's 90% less polluted than diesel. It means we can use the same trucks that use diesel, but this biofuel is put in them, saves a huge amount of fuel. Won't get us to net zero, but it's going to reduce our emissions massively for the next few years until that technology evolves and costs of the vehicles reduce, and we can adopt an electric or alternative low emission vehicle in that. But they're the two biggest. They account for about 82% of our overall emissions, just those two sort of areas of the operation. So they're the big hitters. And then there's other stuff like renewable electricity that we have to use on site. We use aviation for international volume. So we have to look at the technologies evolving there to help reduce, because we grow our volumes. And this is the thing with science-based target initiative. You want to continue to grow your business, obviously, but with that, typically, if you didn't do anything, your emissions would grow. So you have to grow your business, but actually at the same time, fight that growth of emissions and reduce it to net zero eventually. So it's really quite a challenge, but you know, we're on the journey.
Yeah, it sounds like a real balancing act. You mentioned electrification. I think that might be something that a lot of companies see as a bit of an extra hurdle, because, okay, you can say you switch to electricity as a cleaner way of powering vehicles, for example, but how do you make sure that the source of the electricity is also coming from something sustainable? I feel like that might be a bit of a mental hurdle for a lot of businesses. Do you have any tips on that?
There's plenty of energy contracts that supply renewables. So there's that option. Same with people in their own home. So a lot of our drivers are self-employed. If they're able to charge at home, you know, there's Octopus Energy, OVO Energy, and a lot of others that provide renewable energy, but also favourable tariffs for EV drivers, so electric vehicle drivers, where you can charge sort of between, I think one of them is 11 p.m. through to 5 a.m. at like 7p per kilowatt hour, where most people are paying, I think, around 30p at the moment. So really favourable. So you can do it either purchase renewables, or you can also generate yourself. So in our Hub 5 in Hinckley, we have 7,000 solar panels on that roof. It's obviously a huge building, so you know, it's a lot of solar panels. In the parcel industry, we use most of our energy at night, because that's when we're sorting all the lovely packages that everyone's ordered and then deliver them the following day. So in the daytime, that site, when it's a nice sunny day, will just run on that solar. So there'll be people like myself in the office on the computer, et cetera, et cetera. There's not loads of machinery or kit moving at the time. But any excess is then fed back to the grid. They buy it off us for a certain amount of money, and then when we need it, we buy it back. So we're also supporting a renewable grid. So a lot of businesses could do that. There's also battery storage technology coming available. And obviously with the massive increase in energy prices that we've seen over the past sort of 12 to 18 months, the cost of that type of technology becomes closer and more affordable. And it also de-risks your business, because you've then secured a better price, you're producing it yourself, you know, the energy, and you can use it whenever you want on it if it's stored in a battery. So there are some really easy solutions there. And I think if you're renting a property or leasing a property, landlords are more willing to invest in solar as well, because it helps future-proof their building that they've invested in.
You mentioned costs there, and I think, again, that's another thing that businesses might see as a bit of a challenge, because it's assumed that there was going to be a big upfront cost with things like switching to electric vehicles, for example. How do businesses kind of deal with that? Is there a way that they can kind of manage that cost?
Electric vehicles are expensive. They're more expensive than ICE, internal combustion engine vehicles. There's a few things. So I'll talk personally about my car that's electric, okay? So I, over 12 months, have saved probably about £1,500 in fuel, so electric instead of diesel. It has done over 50,000 miles, and all I've done is change four tyres. In my previous existence, when I drove a dirty diesel car, it would have gone in for a service every 8,000 miles, 10,000 miles maybe. I would have had to pay for that, and it was a German manufacturer that usually isn't very cheap when you're servicing, so you've got that additional cost. I've saved probably, I would say, £5,000 to £6,000 probably in fuel, servicing, and the running of the car. Obviously, if you drive certain places in an electric car, you don't have to pay for congestion charge zones, etc. as well. So there are savings, but the outlay of the vehicle, the first sort of payment and the purchase of the vehicle, is more expensive. But you've got total cost of ownership, which means over the lifespan of the car, it should be cheaper than driving a petrol diesel version. I don't pay road tax at the moment as well until 2025 when they change that. I think commercial vehicles are slightly different because they're bigger, you know, there's more. So as a business, we can't get that TCO model comparative to a diesel vehicle yet. So it's still several thousand pounds above a diesel vehicle. But I can see that changing over time. Obviously, we're still sort of in the infancy of these vehicles. As they produce more, the OEMs, the manufacturers, the cost will come down. But again, the fueling of them, servicing, there's less moving parts in electric vehicles, typically about 100 less moving parts. So you don't have to do that. Something I missed out is brakes. When you drive an electric vehicle, this probably sounds a little bit dangerous, but you don't really use a brake. You just take your foot off the accelerator and it'll slow down, regen the battery and give you more miles. So you're not replacing brakes either. You're driving a different driving style. It's calmer, you know, so there's those things as well. So there's investment in electric vehicles is expensive. We believe in the business that it's the right thing to do. It's part of our key strategy. And that's the way we're going to reduce emissions. If we continue just driving diesels, it's not going to reach our net zero goals.
Talking about how these kind of sustainability changes can benefit you personally, that seems like a good opportunity to talk about. What do you think are other ways that people as individuals, like at home, say, for example, other than transport, what are those kind of small changes, those doable changes that people can make? Obviously, we're still going through the cost of living squeeze at the moment. So what are the sort of smaller steps that people can make that aren't going to cost them the earth?
Yeah. I think electricity, obviously, being more mindful of what you're using. It's like in our offices, LED lighting is cheaper than normal traditional lighting. Make sure you're switching things off. Obviously, in our offices, we have motion sensors. So if you don't move for a while, the lighting will turn off. Obviously, at home, you're going to have to use the switch. I think it's that education. I think if you're living in a town or a city, can you walk, cycle, use public transport instead of getting a petrol car or diesel car? Even if you're not in a city, are you planning your journeys, you know, right? Do you really need to, you know, get in the car and go somewhere? I think it's being responsible about your purchasing and the sourcing of your goods as well, to be environmental. So there are all those points. I think we all need recycling, obviously. Everyone, it should be a given, obviously. Everyone should be doing that. Every local council offers, you know, typically a recycling service as well as just normal general waste. So it's making sure that you're aware of what's recyclable, what isn't, because there's such thing as wish cycling, which I have to remind my wife and daughter sometimes, where they put some flimsy bit of plastic in the recycling. And it's like, you know, that isn't recyclable. You know it'd be lovely if it could be recycled, but not at the moment. But make sure that yogurt pot's put in the recycling instead that you put in the bin. So there's all those sort of making sure you're aware of what is recyclable, what isn't, and reducing waste, obviously.
Yeah, no, some brilliant tips there. Thank you. I suppose going back to the workplace, have you had any experience of having to encourage, shall we say, or convince people that might not be so on board with making these sustainability changes? How do companies kind of work within their teams or with their senior leaders to kind of get everybody on board towards sustainability?
I think sustainability can be very diverse in people's opinions, obviously. It's part of our key strategy, so everyone needs to understand that is DPD's strategy and where we are and where we're going with that, to the point where it's not just our vans we're electrifying. Our company car policy is 100% electric car now. So once that the life of the current vehicle is up, they'll have to replace with an electric, and that goes for people that opt out of it as well and get paid cash in instead of a company car. Have to go electric because it's the responsible thing to do. If all of our drivers are doing it, we need to do it. It's also part of our emissions as well. And I think it's just making sure people, if they don't agree with the climate crisis that we're seeing, and I think you know, if you don't read the news and see what's happening at the moment, surprisingly, when someone doesn't agree with it, what's going on, I think you've got to look at the commercial side of it. So there's an ethical and moral obligation as a business and as a person, in my opinion, to do what you can to negate your impact on the environment. But if you don't believe there's a crisis, you've got to look at the commercial aspect. And the fact is we have our own net zero target, but our customers are more and more, especially the larger ones and well established, have their own net zero target. So in emissions, there's scope 1, 2, and 3. We will sit in their scope 3 emissions because we provide a service to them and deliver their parcels on their behalf. And if we don't decarbonize, we'll sit in their scope 3 emissions and prevent them achieving that. So if you're a major customer with a net zero target, you'd be looking at the parcel carrier that is reducing their carbon and moving forward. So if we don't do that from a commercial point of view, we'll lose business. And we don't want to do that. So that's the angle that I would go to influence people if they weren't sort of on board with the climate crisis element of it. I hope that makes sense.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the idea of the circular economy, that idea of kind of reusing resources in part of the process in another part of the process. Would you be able to just explain that concept if people haven't heard of it before?
Yeah, sure. A linear economy would be when something's manufactured, produced, and you use it and then you throw it away. So it's just, that's it. A circular economy would be that it has a second life, it could be broken down, remade, recycled, etc. So that would be a circular economy. So an example that I always use for DPD is that in our hubs, we gather up shrink wrap. So, you know, like cling film for pallets, I'd say, for people that don't know what shrink wrap is. And what we do is bundle it up. We actually sell it to a business that then breaks it down and creates fresh shrink wrap. So that would be circular economy. So it's not just thrown away and put in landfill or burnt or whatever. It's got a second life to it. And there's obviously an economy, because like I said, we just sold our waste to then produce, for that person to then produce another product. So there's, you know, an emerging economy in circular economy to sort of do these things, and it means that things aren't just disposed of and have one life.
So going back to that kind of making that commercial case for things like the circular economy, then is there a way you can ultimately be more profitable if you are reusing things as part of the process? Because I'm just aware that some businesses, if they're not familiar with that kind of process, they might think, oh, it's, you know, it's a lot of effort, it's maybe it's big expense, but in the long run, does it work out better?
I think it depends what product it is, obviously. I'm not an expert on circular economy, but for us, obviously, that waste, which would typically be paid, we'd have to pay to get it thrown away or recycled in a different way. But we're actually being paid for someone to pick it up and then reuse it. So there's definitely a business case to that. And I think that's not just circular economy, but anything in sustainability, where sustainability usually costs more, like we were saying about the vehicles, if you can see where a benefit is, or even a profit or cost saving, that then helps reinforce that business initiative, because it's not a cost to the business, we're actually making money or revenue out of that.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Ollie. It's been brilliant, and I think you've given us all some really good tips to think about, both in terms of the workplace and things that people can do at home. So thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you, Laura. It's been great. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Thrive Content Podcast. Visit www.thrivelearning.com for more information. Be bold. Be brave. Thrive.